So, back to my story. This is Colin Cook and How It Happens, and I'm resuming my story on my life. And by the way, it's not really about my life. It's about Jesus' actions in my life. It's not a success story. It's not a before and after story. It's how Jesus intervenes constantly through the command of his Father to rescue the lost, to rescue those who are drowning. And I was certainly drowning throughout my life in many ways, one way or another. If there's hope for me, if God can do something for me, he can do something for you, dear listener. That is the truth that I am sharing with you. And so, we got to the place where the Lord found me through this crazy flying saucer story. And he led me to the wonderful truth that he was coming back for me at his second coming to take me to his kingdom. Little did I know where that display ad in the newspaper in 1955, advertising Man from Another World, a lecture I thought was on flying saucers, little did I know where that would take me. Little did I know where that dance hall... above the Manor Cafe, where I heard the message for the first time in my life as a 15-year-old boy on the second coming of Christ, little did I realize where all that would take me. Take me out of my provincial home in Grimsby, England. Take me to a whole new world in college, meeting people from 32 different nations, then moving into the ministry, and then into the United States, then marrying, then having children, and then, oh, through many, many trials, tribulations, ups and downs, defeats of all kinds, lead me to talking to you today on the radio. Little did I know any of that. It's amazing where a simple act, sometimes a simple singular event, can change the course of our whole lives. It's not simply that singular event, of course, but the God of grace behind it. That's what I discovered, the God of grace behind that event. Well, the church that I joined was simple and in a weights and measures place, I think. I can't remember, just a simple square little room with an old squeeze box organ, and it was affiliated, it had a sister church that was out of the city in a place called Ulcerby, which was 15 miles, about 17 miles from Grimsby. And so I would go to church there in the morning at Grimsby and then go to church in the afternoon. As a 15-year-old boy, it may seem rather drab to many people today, but I began to look forward to weekends so very, very much, because that's where I would be with these few people. Now, they weren't all hip and with it people. they were a little bit like hobbits, roly-poly, humble, cheerful country Christians who ate nut meat loaf and cold lentils, and who took the Bible at its word. They could laugh and pray, sing hymns, and do jigsaw puzzles. That was about it. But it was a very homey, pleasant environment. Fun, laughter, warmth, kindness, love, generosity towards me. And I think of it now as God's act of generosity towards me, planting me, putting me, giving me roots among a little community of Christians that could be supportive to me, satisfying, pleasurable to me, and, of course, a place of learning and learning more and more about Jesus and about faith. I feel the enormous significance of that now because, as I mentioned earlier, I was a lonely kid. I was a lonely man. I was disconnected. I was, I think, to some extent, dissociated. The polio and the absent father had led me to some feeling and level of disconnection with myself. And of course, as you recall, that led to some strange attractions to the men like Sam, the man who painted the gate of our house and the fence, there was a developing homosexual orientation. And so feeling strange, disconnected, different, it would have been an extremely lonely life, an extremely tempting life, a life that would have led to much more depression than I already had if it were not for those kindly people in Grimsby and Ulcerby. So I think of the way God works with us. He sees us in our lonely state. He sees us in our isolation, and he provides supports for us. He certainly did at that time in my life. It was a very memorable time, a time I look back on with a little quizzicalness now. I mean, because they did seem odd. I admit they did seem strange people. My parents found, they met them on one or two occasions, found them difficult to relate to, just out of their normal world as a fisherman and a fisherman's wife. But you know how God does it, don't you? You remember that verse, think what sort of people you are, whom God has called. Few of you are men of wisdom by any human standard, or are powerful or highly born. Yet to shame the wise, God has chosen what the world counts folly, and to shame what is strong, God has chosen what the world counts weakness. He has chosen things low and contemptible, mere nothings, to overthrow the existing order. I like that verse in the New English Bible. It's 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 26 to 29. And those people were like that. It was a little church in the country, way out in the country. I mean, the church was surrounded by cornfields. It was a wooden church. It was made in 1888. And it had a stove, you know, a wood stove in the middle of it. That's the way we kept the church warm. There was no central heating or anything. But a very charming church, very beautiful and interesting that way. So God has his way of bringing us in from the cold, I always think. And I stayed with those people for 3 years, meeting with them every weekend, looking forward to the weekends. It was my solace. It was my little haven, my little place of comfort during a week where I went to work and didn't like the job I was doing all that much. I stayed with them for 3 years, and during that time they gradually persuaded me to go to college. Now, I had never gone to college. No family member of mine had gone to college. We were working people. My dad was working class. So also my mum had been before she became a housewife and a mother. And so the idea of college was new and different. We went down there to look at it. It was 175 miles away from my home in Grimsby. It was west of London, about 60 miles, or well, 35 miles west of London, I think. And so I finally decided to go there. How in the world... The money issue just didn't seem to be an issue in those days. The church had a plan where students could go to different countries, as well as England itself and Ireland, and sell books door to door. Sell books like children's stories and Bible stories and the life of Jesus stories. They could sell these books to get money to go back to college. And of course, the college costs in those days were not anything near what they are today. So I went to Newbold College in England. It was like another world. It was an entrance into a wholly delightful and beautiful and interesting atmosphere. There were only 150 people in my college, but from 32 different nations of the world. And we didn't have a cafeteria system in those days. There was a rotation system set up for the students by which we all had a different table to sit at each week. We sat at different tables appointed by us, by those in authority, and so we met different people from every nation, well, from so many nations of the world. It was an eye-opener that I will never, never regret. People from Italy, people from Africa, people from Europe, Netherlands, France, Germany, people who would talk about their lives, talk about their countries, share their political interests and their religious experience, their Christian experiences. I felt I was having an education in international affairs. I have to confess that I was far more interested in foreigners than I was in my own countrymen, but it is a thing I will never regret. It gave me a foundation to this very day, an interest in international affairs, an interest in the world of what country is there and what country is over there. I have a globe in my office. And I love looking at that globe these days when I'm listening to Fox News or CNN and listening to a news item that is about some area of the world, and I'm not sure where that is. So I go to my globe and figure out where that is, and it just opens my heart and mind to the rest of the world. Year by year, I would go to different places in Europe to sell books, Christian books, children's books, and Christian books on the life of Jesus in order to get money to go back to college. I went to Ireland to sell books there and to certain parts of England, and then I went to Norway to sell books and Sweden. I didn't know Norwegian, nor did I know Swedish, but we learnt the canvas, as it was called, by heart, and we just boldly in those student days went to someone's home, knocked at the door, and tried to recite our canvas in their language. I remember the first door I went to, I forgot it within about a sentence or two, and the person at the door, the lady at the door, felt so sympathetic that she just invited me in and bought four of my books. That's how we got through college. We traveled to those countries sometimes by hitchhiking. I remember going with a few friends in an old Rolls-Royce, that somebody in Sweden wanted to buy, and he arranged for a student in England to purchase it and to bring it to him. Everybody watched us as we drove along. Everybody wanted to look in as we stopped at a traffic light, because that was some Rolls-Royce, was that. There really are many stories to tell in those student years, but I haven't time for it. But just to tell you that I once sold a couple of books or so, to the keeper of the King of Sweden's privy purse, his private financier. And from that, I was able to forward some books through him to the King of Sweden, who later on sent me a letter thanking me for those books and assuring me he would read them. A story of the life of Christ I got into his hands, the King of Sweden. How odd, how curious, that simple, humble little folk who give themselves to Jesus find themselves sometimes in high places. Today I sent the check to KLT for the radio rent. It's 870 this month, a little higher than usual, 870-odd. Could you help me with it? I do live hand to mouth with this ministry and this radio broadcast, and right now, as of now, I don't have the funds to cover it. But I send that check by faith. It goes to KLT locally, and then they send it to headquarters, and usually the exchange takes about 10 days, sometimes alarmingly sooner than that. But if you can help with a donation to help cover that 870-odd, several donations from different people could help. Maybe somebody out there, just one person, would like to cover it. Anyway, if you would, whatever you can do to help with the radio broadcast rent, please send it to Faith Quest, P.O. Box 366, Littleton, Colorado 80160. That's Faith Quest, P.O. Box 366, Littleton, Colorado 80160. You can take care of it by PayPal if you like, by simply going to our website, faithquestradio.com, faithquestradio.com, where you can make the donation by PayPal. Remember, these donations are tax deductible. I'll send you a receipt at the beginning of the new year, the middle of January, somewhere around there. So thank you very, very much for your help, for your support, for your interest in this broadcast, and above all, thank you for allowing yourself to be trained by it. See you next time. Cheerio, and God bless.